And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
On today's episode of the Glue Guys, the Brooklyn Nets, the team that was mired in obscurity for years from the Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett trade, having no draft picks. They've just picked up Blake Griffin midseason for vet min to join Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden and Bruce Brown.
Big whoop.
It's just our life. We're going to talk about that. We're going to do like the nine biggest questions about Blake Griffin. This is all about emergency
big,
pod. This is all about
big,
Blake Griffin.
Big pause there. Okay, cool. Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike Yersel.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys, NetsDaily.com. The Athletic. Get yourself behind that paywall.
Wow.
TheAthletic.com/Glue Guys.
Wow.
Special deal waiting for you if you do that. Brian.
Give it to me, Mike. You know what I want.
Nets are back.
You know what I want.
The Nets are back.
How are you? Is this the worst or the best thing that ever happened to the Nets? Because that's all that's out there on Reddit right now. That's all I'm getting. It's either the worst or the best.
It's so funny that people are somehow anti-Blake Griffin signing. I mean, this whole pod, emergency prod, breaking glass. This is...
Yeah.
That's glass.
Okay.
Good. This is the emergency pod. The Nets have signed Blake Griffin to a veteran minimum deal. But yes, you bring up a great point, Brian. There is like an anti-Blake Griffin sentiment out there, a nasty, ugly sentiment.
I get that people haven't heard about these prices. Did it just break
at
the vet?
These prices?
I mean, these low.
In this economy.
Yeah. I don't know. Did that just break that it was vet minute? Because I didn't hear that before. And you're just saying that. Is that he's leaving some money on the table? Is that the idea?
Yeah, he's leaving. So just a small dive in the minutia here. The Nets could have had three different ways they could assign Blake Griffin: vet min, a designated player exemption or disabled player exemption. I still don't know what the acronym stands for. They got that from Spencer Dinwiddie's alleged season-ending injury, though if you follow him on Instagram.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that for one second.
Dinwiddie may be back next week. We don't know.
For real.
But they can basically get anyone on a final year of their contract or a new contract for 1 year for $5.7 million. And then they also have a taxpayer mid-level exemption, which is like $3.5-4 million. The Nets preserve those two possible assets to use to get another player. And they just get Blake Griffin, who was all NBA like two or three seasons ago, for vet min. What a life. Nets world. Nets world. Brian.
Thoughts, comments? Is that what you're about to say?
So we have a structure to the episode, and we're so excited to discuss it. I have come up with basically the nine most pertinent questions surrounding the Blake Griffin signing. And the first one is, who is Blake Griffin now? So let's do a quick stats deep dive here for a second. So just technically two full seasons ago, but three seasons ago, Blake Griffin was averaging 24.5 points per game, 5 assists, almost 8 rebounds, shooting 52.5% from the field, 36% from 3, like just 100% ready to roll, perfect. He has declined. He got hurt last season. He only played 18 games last season, and he was only averaging 15.5 points. I don't know if it was hurt last season or the season before. Anyways, basically, he's a shell of himself. He's played 20 games this year, 12 points, 4 assists, 5 rebounds. Here are the numbers, the shooting numbers. Basically 32% from 3 on 6 attempts a game. And from 2, he's shooting 43% on 2-point attempts.
Can we look at MPG as well?
Minutes? His MPG is 31 minutes a game. So okay. It's not.
He's getting some run.
It ain't nothing. So he ain't what he was, right? Obviously, there's a reason why, you know, he has been bought out and why he's now going, you know, to the Nets on a vet min. I don't know. I still feel like that he's still a guy who's going to help out this team mightily, particularly a team that allegedly traded all their depth in the deal to bring in James Harden. If you can get Blake Griffin on a vet min, that's a guarantee. That is a win. Almost doesn't matter what he does. That just the exploration of that is a win for me.
Do you buy into the conspiracies that he's dogging it? There's lots of that going on out there. There's a lot of dogging it, Kamru.
Well, I think it would be justified. Okay. Right? There's some dog in that, but also I'm also not bothered by it. I wasn't bothered by it with James Harden. I'm not bothered by it with Blake Griffin if it is true. Yeah.
I think it could be, you know, a hodgepodge of cooked knees plus doggedness, you know, that his real number could be more like 16 or 17 points per game had he not, you know, inserted a little bit of dog energy into that equation. Sure. But, I mean, to answer the big question, though, is like, you know, who is he now? I don't know. We should have gotten a Pistons guy on here. I mean, like, I was just listening to the Zach Lowe podcast from last week, and they basically made it sound like he was, here's what it was. You know, they didn't invoke Nick Batum, but I think the Nick Batum parallel could be one of the closest ones. You know, because he looked as bad as Nick Batum was looking when he was on Charlotte.
Batum was the worst player in the NBA when he was on Charlotte. Blake was still.
What are you basing that off? That's just
because. Well, yeah. Do you remember his stats from last year?
They were bad. They were not good. I think
he was averaging like 2 points per game.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. It was pretty wild.
So he was the worst player in the NBA, at least if you count for salary. If you do that,
which you always should. You really should.
Blake is still 12.5 points per game, 4 assists. 5 rebounds or whatever. Like that's a guy. That's more than a guy. I mean, the assist total is actually what you're excited about because he's always been a good passer.
Yeah.
For what as great as he is in an athlete, he was always a pretty good passer.
And I did watch my YouTube highlights before this podcast, so I know a thing or two. And you know, the passing game is alive and well. I'll say that, like, basically from what it looked like, I watched like one game where he had 25 or something against the Lakers and I don't know, December, January. And all of the clips from offense are him at the, you know, standing at the top of the key, the 3-point arc, and kind of dishing and operating and looking to shoot semi-contested threes. That to me is very much dogging it. You know, just that POV. I might elevate my dogging numbers a little bit higher, actually, and be slightly more optimistic for that reason than most. Because basically he was trying to, you know, do that like, you know, stretch four playmaking thing where he's kind of, you know, plugging away at Jeremy Grant at the rim from you know, deep. But yeah, anyways, sorry. Where is he now? We need a Pistons guy to know whether it's real or not. But for me, it seems like dogging could be very much part of this.
Yeah, and if you want to go into dogging stats, and almost it's to the Nets' benefit if he was, in fact, dogging it because he didn't want to be there in Detroit, and he obviously wants to be in Brooklyn back with DeAndre Jordan, which is so exciting. Blake, over like the entirety of his career, when he was a tremendous player, all NBA, he always averaged more than 10 2-point attempts per game. In some seasons, you know, when he was at his elite level, he was about like 16.5, 17 2-point attempts per game. This season, it's been down to 5. Now, there's like this whole, like, there's all this weird information that you can get with Blake. Because if you look at the team he was on, Detroit was awful, right? Is an awful team, is like the worst team in the NBA. And the good moves that they made was that they got Jeremy Grant, who operates in the relatively the same space that Blake typically operates in. And they got Mason Plumlee, or Miles Plumlee, one of the Plumleys.
Mason, yeah.
Yeah, Mason. So, yeah, I'm not worried There's no worry here. This is a vet minimum deal. This is what, this is the luxury of having the super team that the Nets have. This is the dream that Luis Scola thought about many, many moons ago. The red moon of Luis Scola, when he came out and had his prophecy, his eyes were rolling back into his head, and he popped back in and he said, when they get good, they'll get everyone.
He said Blake Green or Blake Griffin is going to supplement Jeff Green. He's going to be a Jeff Green insurance policy.
Let me hop to that. That's one of my questions. Is Blake Griffin better than Jeff Green? And I say he's not, right? Like, I think Jeff Green for this team, I think Jeff Green is better.
You know what's kind of funny to think is, like, Jeff Green might be a bouncier bro than him at this, you know, I mean, very clearly is, or at least in terms of intention, what he wants to be doing. Is he better than Jeff Green? It's a big question. Wow.
Because here's what it kind of leads to, and this is one of my other questions. Does Blake become one of the guys that's in the closing lineup for this team? Like, and we're going to have to see. Like, that's unanswerable right now. We can't figure that out. But right now, if everyone's healthy, to me, the closing lineup is obviously the big three plus Joe Harris and Jeff Green. Like, because I think you want Jeff Green out there to be switchy on defense. I know this breaks everyone's heart that Bruce Brown, the god, is not out there closing lineups. I just think you're still going to want a bit beefier dude and a bit more bulky and a bit bigger. Jeff Green, though, Bruce Brown is obviously the best center in the NBA. Everyone can recognize that and know that.
Yeah.
But so that's kind of why the Blake Griffin question is. Like, is he better than Jeff Green? I think he's, like, if you're playing one-on-one, Blake is better. Like, you know, Blake does more things. But what the Nets need, which is switchy defense guy who doesn't care about touching the ball and is happy to sit in the corner on offense, that's Jeff Green. And I love myself some Jeff Green. What a problem to have.
Yeah. In terms of, like, intentionality, Jeff Green is who you want on there, because it's really a supplemental player who really knows his role. It's unclear whether Blake Griffin will come in and immediately intuit that he's, like, the seventh man. And, you know, might get late game looks, but probably presumably not. I mean, yeah, until proven wrong, it's Jeff Green's spot to lose this small five, whatever. They're very similar looking too. Like, everything I watched those Blake Griffin clips, and especially now that he's, like, he's quite a bit more lead footed and plodding. They're just very, like, similar shaped and, like, you know, stocky 6'8" guys. I think that, you know, Sean Marks just like, oh, I like Jeff Green. Let's try to, like, duplicate that as best we can. Cause I mean, who doesn't like Jeff Green?
So this isn't one of my questions that I planned out, but I'm going to ask it to you now. This is a bonus question. How much of a no-brainer is this? Like, there is that vocal minority out there that is concerned that somehow Blake Griffin being on this team is going to ruin the chemistry that the team has, is going to take away minutes from Nick Claxton, which actually it's going to take away minutes from Nick Claxton. It's going to mess with Jeff Green's role, which everyone loved. He was, like, the veteran leader that you need on the team. Do you actually, is there a downside? Is there a threat that this could actually somehow negatively impact the Nets?
I mean, the Claxton stuff is maybe the only, like, foreseeable issue. People are really loving them some Nick Claxton right now. And I get that. I don't dislove Nick Claxton, but you know, I'm weirdly reminded also of Andre Blatch in this situation. Not in terms of...
It's a Sunday night. The kids are asleep and you're going to bring up Andre Blatch? Jeez.
Not when my kids are unconscious in the other room.
God. The humanity, bro.
Just in terms of God, why does he remind me of Andre Blatch? He reminds me of Andre Blatch because it's a reclamation project. And reclamation projects have a whole lot of interesting kind of basketball narratives built around them. And they create a really inviting Twitter atmosphere for everybody. Just kidding. It makes it very toxic. Because people have this, like... People love to fight about these kinds of things. Blake Griffin right now seems like a super easy person to be like, cooked knees, is dogging it, sucks, forget that guy. Also, I watched a bunch of like drama alert videos of him with the Clippers where like Jared Dudley is like, guy sucked. Hate that guy. which, you know, if you're a Dud fan like we are, you know, yeah, that you have to take that into consideration now.
Old potato sack.
Absolutely. Right. That's right. Chemistry wise, he doesn't play enough of like a role, and he's interchangeable enough that like I'm not super duper worried about on court chemistry. And for that reason, like, you know, if you're not playing a big part on court, like how much can you really involve yourself personnel off court chemistry wise? It's not likely that you can, because like, shut up, you don't play. What are you talking about? It's like Kenneth Faried had like a bad attitude and wasn't playing. It's like, fine, go away.
Yeah, go away.
Yeah.
Well, first, I don't think he's a reclamation. He's not a, if we're going HGTV, he's not a fixer-upper with Chip and Joanne. Okay. He's a love it or list it. Right?
Sure.
It's either you walk into that house, you fix it up a little bit, you keep it, or you just sell it.
What about Rehab Addict?
Come on.
Do you like that one?
I love that.
And it's also, it's a Detroit-based show, so that's a close parallel.
Another chef kiss for you, my friend.
Appreciate it.
So I'm so pro. I mean, it's just so crazy that I think people are being negative about that, because, you know, part of the negativity comes from, are they going to get Andre Drummond, which I will assess later in the episode. But this is all positive. Blake Griffin reportedly gave up $13 million in his buyout just to get out of Detroit, right? Which could be viewed as like, wow, that guy's just really unhappy. I view it as motivation, and he knew immediately where he wanted to go. He's very close friends with DeAndre Jordan, I'm sure. And DeAndre is like master.
He's really the
assistant GM of the
Nets.
He is
dug in like a tick now. You are not going to get rid of DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. Well, why? He's really should just be in the front office. Right, he shouldn't even play. They should pay him $10 million a year to be in the front office because he can get you anyone else in the NBA besides Serge Ibaka.
Of a certain era. Yeah, exactly.
Let me actually ask you, would you rather have Serge Ibaka or Blake Griffin?
Of course. Come on. Obviously.
Which one?
Ibaka. I mean,
okay. Yeah. Okay.
Not close.
Not to hate on Blake.
No.
You know, welcome to the team.
Sure. But
yeah, Serge Ibaka. So I'm not worried about the fact that he gave up that much money, knew where he wanted to go immediately. He's entering a friendly team. Kevin Durant liked the Bleacher Report's Instagram story about.
Give that a like, huh?
Yeah. That's a huge. I mean, that's a seal of approval right there. That's basically passing through Senate confirmation on your way to Joe Biden's cabinet if you get Kevin Durant's like. So I'm not worried about chemistry. Actually not worried about role at all. I mean, this team is like they've built up the depth. Nash has figured out like, okay, I got on the bench squad mob, you know, he has Shamit and Tyler Johnson's playing some minutes. Nick Claxton's like this interesting kind of curveball on this team. But they did need another big hefty body, and Blake Griffin is a big hefty body who also happens to be a playmaker. And also what I like about it, just a small thing, the Nets getting him means he doesn't go to Milwaukee. He doesn't go to, you know, name any other contender, Boston. Boston could have really used Blake Griffin. And it's a luxury that he's at in Brooklyn. For other teams, I feel like he would have been like a crucial piece.
Yeah.
If you're like even in Philly where like, you know, they have a lot of bigs and they don't really need a Blake Griffin, like they could actually use a guy who can move the ball and get assists like the way Blake does. It's a luxury. I don't know. I don't understand. I mean, I know. Let's get to this right now. Okay. The question is, just because they Blake Griffin, do they still need Andre Drummond if he is in fact bought out? What a world.
Jeez. Jesus.
Here's who. So to understand this question.
We're getting gluttonous. My God. Can you listen to us?
To understand this question, you have to understand what the Nets lineup is right now with Blake Griffin in it. So you have the big three, Harden, Kyrie, KD. You have Joe Harris, the greatest three-point shooter, I guess, besides Steph Curry in the NBA. And DeAndre Jordan. Let's say that's just the five. I know DJ hasn't been starting that much, but let's say that's starting five. The bench with Blake, it's Blake, Jeff Green, Shamit, Bruce Brown. And that's nine players. Nine is a hefty playoff lineup, right? Mm-hmm. Like typically you get down to eight.
Yeah, you want to be at eight. That's a sweet spot.
So that's nine, and that doesn't even include Claxton TLC, you know, TLC, I know he's on the outs for this team, and Tyler Johnson, right? And so if you include Andre Drummond into that mix, that's 10 guys who probably all deserve to play. And a lot of them are fours and fives at that point. The weakness of this team was the four spot, and now it's going to become, as you said, gluttonous. That you have KD starting at four, and then coming off the bench is Jeff Green or DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, or Andre Drummond. So I get to you, Brian.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
Andre Drummond, do you still desire him so much?
You know, it's funny, too, because you're just saying, like, our guard play is, like, suddenly sort of, like, slightly further. We're going deeper into our bench to get guards off the bench.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that that feels true, but also that, like, you know, the Jeff Greens and Blake Griffins kind of do satisfy a lot of the playmaking that you would want from a lot of, like, Shamet and TLC and Tyler Johnson, bless their hearts, are not the playmakers that even Jeff Green and Blake Griffin are, to a large extent. So it's funny that we're getting, it's really positionless basketball, Mike. It's, we're really doing it now.
You're going to have Blake running point forward, Bruce Brown at center.
Yeah.
And Joe Harris just fist bumping the whole time.
Yeah.
You know?
Fantastic
look.
Shamit's just designated Rover at this point.
Stopper.
Yeah, he's just pure Rover. So yeah, it's a weird lineup. And I guess I'll take anybody, Mike. Who cares? You know, forget it. You know, I've completely lost connection to reality with who we should or shouldn't get or are able to get. You know, we just things fall into our lap all of a sudden. So, you know, heck, why not? But in terms of actual need, I'm not sure that we need the Drummond effect quite yet.
So, and we'll talk more about this after the break, because this Drummond conversation dives right into another conversation we've been having all season, and we have more of an answer than we've ever had before.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back. And if you haven't yet, go on iTunes, rate us 5 stars. We need them. We want to have them. We love reading them. This is a 5-star from Costa Rican 21. He said, guys are amazing. That's it. That's all we need.
That's all it says. Guys are amazing. Not even us.
Guys are amazing. Just guys. Like
boys.
You know.
The boys. Boys. Here's one for the boys.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about Drummond and Blake Griffin. And obviously, like, a lot of the conversation is framed about, like, the Nets waiting for Drummond. And we don't know if that's going to happen or not. And the Nets ended up getting Blake Griffin. Does that stop them from getting Drummond? Let me ask you this, Brian. Does Blake Griffin do anything to help the Nets in a matchup against the 76ers?
Against Joel Embiid. We need a drop for that. We need some kind of...
Joel?
Yeah. We need a... does it do anything? I was just thinking about I was listening to the Athletic pod. This is not a plug that I planned for, Mike, so just Please. Heads up. But I was listening to that... what's the name of the feed where it has all of them from all the national guys?
The Athletic NBA show.
Yeah. So listen to the Schlecht one. Quite good. And they have this thing where they're playing the LaMelo Ball. Whoever's doing the announcing at Charlotte has, like, really amazing calls for LaMelo Ball. Strong recommend. But I'm just reminded of I need something for this Joel Embiid meme, because this is just going to keep coming up until we, you know, dunk on this bro in a fucking playoff series. Sorry, shouldn't be swearing. It's late. I've had too many gnocchi. I've got a gnocchi buzz going. Sorry, what was the question?
does Blake Griffin do anything helping the Nets in their, I'll go in their matchup against the 76ers. Doesn't have to be about Joel Embiid, but just in their matchup against the 76ers.
No, not really. I mean, honestly, if I, you know, do I think Who's, yeah, no, I don't think so. The Joel Embiid stopper meme is not real. Or it's like, it's real, but it's not, you know, there isn't one. So why engage with that premise? So no, it doesn't move the needle one way or the other outside of just like, it, you know, improves our, it shores up our rotation in the event that, you know, Jeff Green gets a, I don't know, a Pat Beverly induced contusion or something, you know.
I think it helps in this way only that it lets Nash mix in a whole bunch of guys. It's a, just another person that he can mix into like the big man rotation. You know, because if you think about it right now, let's say without Blake Griffin, it was just Jeff Green, DeAndre Jordan, and Claxton. And as much as I love Nicholas Claxton, I'd be terrified that he's getting minutes in the playoffs. Like, it's just too soon, right? He still gets winded after 3 minutes of play. So we need our guy to get his conditioning up. Need to get on that Peloton. I know, you know, I'll keep joking about that. DeAndre Jordan, he is playing better. People are upset always with him. He's playing better. And Jeff Green, obviously, is going to come back from that contusion probably after the All-Star break. Blake just gives Nash. Nash could be out there like Mike Mussina. Throwing a lot, throw that knuckle curve ball, regular curve, the slurve, throwing all of his little pitches. You know, I think Blake's going to play mostly small ball five for the Nets. And, you know, he's going to be, he's not a post player. He's not a guy who really operates in that part of the floor. If he's playing on offense, yeah, you're not going to respect his 3-point shot. So he's not really a stretch five, but he is a, like a ball handling. I can make a move in a way. I can make an athletic play still, even though he's sap some, like he can still make Embiid work a little bit. So I do think it helps just a smidge. And he actually kind of like, so my whole theory, and we've talked about this many times, the 76ers matchup in the future, if it happens, it's a fallacy to say that the Nets need to stop Joel Embiid.
Right, right. We've done this.
The truth is that they need to stop everyone else.
Right. Just this is Mike's. You. This is what you're going to get tattooed on your ribs. This is
just limit Ben Simmons and Seth Curry, Tobias Harris. And I bring up Tobias Harris because he's been great this year. And actually, Blake Griffin is the kind of guy that can match up with a Tobias Harris. Mm,
that's true. That's a good one. I'm actually interested. You know, and I know that this is not a, again, not a Joel Embiid stopper, but I'm interested in the Nick Claxton on Joel Embiid defensive minutes, just because. I think, I mean, of the people that guard Joel Embiid, I think you go swipey, take chargies versus like just kind of go toe to toe in the post. Like, I feel like that's the better, more efficient way. Neither are a great solution, but I think swipey chargy is the move. Which
Nick Claxton, yeah. His defense and Embiid will remind me of. There's like a lot of those cartoon Disney movies when we were growing up where it was like a human and an animal would make their way through like the snow or the desert. There'd be some animal pal protecting this human who's trying to get back. And it's like a young wolf pup.
Is this there's some the movie, Jungle Book or what are we talking about?
Yeah, Jungle Book, but there's like those sub B-level, C-level type Jungle Book movies where it's man. And animal teaming up to make their way back to safety, back home. And the
homeward,
animal
homeward bound,
little homeward boundy, right?
That's and there, the one, that was animal, the one with the dogs.
There was always a scene where the human was like terrified. There was like a big wolf, and the human was terrified.
You're talking about something so specific, and
I can't remember the movie. So I'm, just, sure, I'm generalizing, generalizing. Yeah. And the baby wolf who is protecting the human,
right,
would step in front of the human and growl, and then they would fight. And the baby wolf would come out hurt, but it would win the fight somehow or scare off the big one. Nick Claxton going against Joel Embiid he's the baby wolf, Nick Claxton. Oh. Joel is the big wolf.
Who's the human? Are you the human?
Bruce Brown.
Yeah, Bruce Brown is the
Protect Bruce Brown. You must protect Bruce Brown.
Yeah.
By the way, Jared Dubin, who writes, I think he writes for CBS Sports and for 538, but he had a really good. Really good story on 538 about James Harden, how different he plays in Brooklyn versus Houston. And an amazing stat in there is that the Harden-Bruce Brown pick and roll is the most effective pick and roll in the NBA right now.
Come on.
Insane.
Come on.
The most effective. They are, you know, there's something like of the teammates who do, have done it at least 80 times over the season, Bruce Brown, James Harden are the most effective, most efficient.
What are we going to do about this is a crazy thing to say, but what are we going to do about Bruce Brown? Making sure that we get his minutes in
max
there.
Contract.
No, but like, I mean this seriously, like, when Kevin Durant comes back,
get him a baby wolf.
He gets like forced out of the rotation in a way that I'm not comfortable with.
I was thinking of tweeting just to piss people off is like, should Kevin Durant come off the bench?
We should do that just to see what happens.
Because too many people.
There was a great, I was actually really pleased with Twitter for one thing, which was, so you had a tweet about the Knicks who live rent-free in your mind, Mike. They're living rent-free. because the tweet was about how they passed on Blake Griffin. You had said that they passed on him and KD and Kyrie and LeBron and throw Blake in with that group. And somebody was like, they're like, is this guy for real? He's comparing Blake Griffin to LeBron? What a joke. And to Twitter's credit, everyone jumped on that guy and was like, no, that's not what the point of that was. Which it could go either way. You never know, like, if somebody's going to, you know, that's going to be the new thing to brigade people with. And, you know, now Mike's the guy who thinks that Blake is the next LeBron.
Well, yeah, let's do this. I'm going to take another quick break and then we'll be back. Wow. I've got actually an extension of the Sixers question, but we're going out west.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So I promised you, Brian, that we would talk about one other thing. And, you know, like so much of our conversation, we're so Eastern Conference focused.
Yeah.
I got to say, the Nets are pretty good. And we also need to be thinking about the NBA Finals matchups.
Wow. Okay.
And I think Sean Marks is thinking about a potential NBA Finals matchup. Because my question to you is, does Blake Griffin do anything against or help in any way against the Lakers?
And the Joel Embiid of the Lakers.
Exactly, which is Anthony Davis. So this is an interesting question that I wrote, obviously. So it must be interesting if I wrote it.
Like you put it down on paper?
Yeah. I wrote, okay. Got it right here. Okay. Okay, so we're so focused on Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid is a pure center, a pure five, a beast, unstoppable, you know, modern day Shaq, all that baloney. Okay, Anthony Davis does not like to play the five. He likes to play the four. He also has I think it's like Achilles tendinopathy or some weird Achilles thing going on, which is usually a precursor, unfortunately, to maybe a more serious Achilles tear, which could happen. You don't want that to happen.
All right, Doc.
You know, I have the one part of the body I know best is the Achilles.
Yes.
So does Blake Griffin do anything against the Lakers? I think Blake helps more against the Lakers than he would against the Sixers. In that, beyond the fact that you can just get Blake Griffin for a veteran minimum, which of course any team in the NBA would do, I think that is actually the motivating factor, if you're Sean Marks, to get him. The reason why is because you can put Blake, even though I think he's going to play small ball five a lot more than maybe he did in Detroit, you can put Blake at the four still. He still is stretchy enough, still is playmakery enough to put him at the four with a real center, whether it's DeAndre or Andre Drummond, whatever happens. I think Blake has more of an impact in a Lakers series than he would in some Sixers series. He matches up. I'm not saying he's not going to guard Anthony Davis, but there's some things that Blake can do. He's another big body, times you can kind of put him on LeBron to just stand in the way of LeBron.
Mm.
Blake does more in Lakers than he does at the Sixers. That is my
theory. I like it.
The last one, you know, I have a couple small ones.
Okay.
Will Blake be more of a small ball five, or is he more of a power forward on this team? It doesn't matter. The answer is it does not matter, but does it matter? And what's the answer?
I mean, I really do see him as like a true, like, what's it called in theater when you have a backup? What's the backup called in theater?
A stand-in?
Stand-in. He's just a Jeff Green stand-in in my mind. That's really, like, they feel incredibly interchangeable. I mean, that's how I would plan for his implementation. I could be way off. He could be, like, they could play together and do weird things that I'm not prepared for. Very incredibly weird things. But that's sort of where I would assume that he's going to be inserted as, you know, just giving depth to that position that's been working so well for us throughout the season.
Yeah. And that's what, again, it kind of links back to like my whole Steve Nash as Mike Mussina take. It just gives like another really fun player to throw out there in certain lineups mm-hmm. because he can play the three or not the three. He can play the four or the five. If he's your small ball five, it's kind of, he's not as athletic as Draymond was peak Golden State Warriors, but
yeah,
a lot of similarities, bigger body, good passer, can start get the rebound, start the break.
Mm-hmm.
He really helps the rebounding. It's just crazy. Let's take the pullback. We should have done this at the beginning and we have, yeah. But that the Nets, your Brooklyn Nets, Brian, are the team that this is just happening to. That it is just the Nets.
I'm dead to it. I've gotten so used to it. I'm just, it's like, I've gotten all the way to the end of the hero's journey to the point where I've like, you know, I'm in the Scarface mansion face down in a giant pile hating life. You know, it's already, I've, you know, how it is. I'm just complete. You know, you go right to the end of the story where it's too much. It's too much good things.
It's so strange. And again, it speaks to sort of, remember when we were like, and I think I titled one of our episodes like this, the culture is dead, right? The Nets culture is dead.
What culture?
Yeah. You smartly said,
oh, I did.
It's just a new culture. Mm. It's just a different, you know, the Nets culture of Kenny Atkinson was one thing. It was development. It was growth. This is new culture. This is, you know, Mohawk Airlines versus Pan Am.
That's right.
You perfectly stated, which is a Mad Men reference. You know,
from season three,
yeah. Episode 12, third act. Yeah. So this is normal. Mm-hmm. Like we should all get comfortable in this world. The Nets are getting Blake. I can't.
It's a good macro.
This is so. I know Blake is diminished athletically. I know he. Like, so there's like the anti-Blake tweets are also like, what does he really do for the Nets? Like, how does he really help them? What, you know, their biggest weakness is defense. How does Blake help that? Like,
yeah.
That's the voice of the dissenters.
There was one really good, like I was doing the Reddit thread, looking through it, you know, of the, you know, on NBA thread or Reddit about this. And like maybe like six comments down, there's someone who's like got a Golden State Warriors flair who's like, I'm just here to see us all delude ourselves into thinking this isn't going to work out again. Like this is I like that energy around this team. Basically they're saying like, it's going to be good. Blake Griffin's going to play well or whatever. We all thought that James Harden wasn't good. We all thought that the Kevin Durant Kyrie thing wasn't going to work out. It's obviously all clicking and it's just yet another part of what makes the Nets scary at the moment. We're doing
scary some hours. Brian,
I don't know that I love the scary hours thing. Am I the only one that doesn't, I mean, it's obviously not a reference that's that. Not sort of like for me, I guess, but.
Yeah, and Drake just dropped Scary Hours Part 2 or
okay.
Something like that. I'm sorry.
No, it's not. I get it. It's over. I did want to do one thing, though, like and kind of drill down on one of the like the big negative. And I just want to make sure that we do this some justice. Well, two negatives. First of all,
okay.
Somebody on Twitter pointed out that Blake Griffin has a new show, a cross prankster show, where he's pranking the prankster on a new TV series. Very niche. Very niche. It's very it's instant karma, you know. Can I say something about that? Is the prank show the lowest form of comedy? Is that the
Some would say it's the highest. I don't. I think prank shows suck.
Would Ashton Kutcher say it's the highest?
Ashton Kutcher, Rob Dyrdek.
Yeah.
And the guys from Staten Island who are crank, whatever they are. Yeah. Crank those anchors? Guys. You know the guys that are on True TV?
Yeah.
When it's every year when you watch March Madness, that is the commercial. Wait,
I don't know
that they
if
blast.
I do know these guys.
I know you don't care about this. But
no,
people
I know.
Out there in the world know about
who is this? I know about things. I could know.
You don't know about these? The what are they called? Well, it doesn't matter. Everyone knows what they are. Okay. There's these five guys from Staten Island who, the Practical Jokers. What?
Okay.
Sorry.
They
wow.
Sound, they sound
the
cool.
The fact that I didn't know that title was terrible.
That's funny that I didn't know that. Yeah. I mean, like, anyways, like the YouTube pranksters, like that's a sure. very lowbrow world. No offense if you're a fan of the show and you're a YouTube prankster. No offense.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Was Jackass a prank show?
That's a great question. So I would say no. As in, like, there was some prankishness to it. The same way, it's not like a skateboarding show, right? There's skateboarding in it, for sure. But it wasn't a skateboarding show.
Was it a sex show? There's some sex in it.
A little of everything. It was a salad.
What was it? A
whoa,
stunt show?
Whoa. I mean, do you want to... Should we do, like, a four-part series on this? Or is that...
Chicken or egg?
Yeah.
What was tough. It? I guess it's a, I would say it's a stunt show. And that's, there's not many stunt shows, but that is a stunt show.
So are we worried about the cringe emanating from Blake Griffin's various entertainment pursuits?
No, absolutely not.
Okay,
because
don't worry about it.
Blake's, everyone's made this joke. I think I made this joke on Twitter. Blake's going to be great for the New York City comedy scene, right? Like, because Blake Griffin, I think he did UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade, excuse me, in LA. I was a producer on the Athletics Clippers podcast.
Okay.
That Paul Scheer, comedian, he's
funny
the bald guy in the league, which feels really demeaning to say he's the bald guy in the league, but he's the bald guy in the league who wears funny hats.
See the guy with the big gap in his front teeth?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was like, I was at a Space Jam reading with Blake, and Blake was hilarious. And I think Blake went up to like, there's like some comedy festival in Montreal, and this is so sad that I listen to too much Marc Maron, so this is like all part of my
interesting
To Catch a Rising Star.
Okay.
I don't know. This is so
What's
sad.
Happening?
But Blake's love for comedy is authentic.
Okay.
And I like that because I think this team, I mean, come on. Him and DeAndre back together is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I guess DeAndre is the funniest Brooklyn Net right now. It's not Kyrie Irving, so I guess it's...
Quibi had an attempt at doing a celebrity-driven prank show with Chance the Rapper, Mike.
Yeah, so I think pranks are stupid. Like, when I hear stories about George Clooney is like the master pranker on movie sets, I think...
Very low EQ. I feel like that's a low EQ
like,
guy.
That sucks.
You don't want to be... And that's why I'm a little bit... When they invoked the chemistry issues, the guy who's pranking, like, doing lame pranks in the locker room, like, I hate to be... This is going to be a double F-word pod here, but fuck that guy. Nobody wants that guy. Nobody likes the guy who's like...
Absolutely.
Hid your socks. Like, where's the socks?
But I don't think that's Blake.
Give me the goddamn socks.
The reason why I brought it up is pureness of comedy is I think ultimately what he wants to be is he wants to be, you know, in the Judd Apatow movies.
Yeah.
Coming up forward. He doesn't want to be in Practical Jokers movies, which are very popular and they make a ton of money.
The second part of it was that I didn't want to glance over this thing with like, the Nick Claxton development stuff is kind of real. We did kind of blow past that.
Coming from you, this is rich.
Why?
The largest, loudest agitator of Claxtonia, Claxton Nation.
We change our minds. We're you know, I'm not married to any take. You know,
that's what makes us good.
Dynamic,
stick to
I'm
takes.
Reevaluating stuff on an hourly, if not minutely basis. All the time. All of my takes throughout the years.
All your takes,
I've got a Rolodex of takes. Does it really screw up the Claxton development process? Are we cutting into his minutes, Mike?
Can I say the Nets shouldn't worry about the Nick Claxton?
That.
As you're much not, as I love Nick Claxton, they shouldn't be worried about Nick Claxton.
I got worried all of a
because
sudden.
this team is so good. I still think Claxton is going to get minutes. It's just going to be diminished. under Blake. What Blake also lets them do is to continue to sit out guys for multiple weeks for chest contusions and all the random things that continue to happen to basketball players. It's just another guy who they can put in there while KD continues to nurse a hamstring.
I want Nash to run Claxton until he spews his guts out right there at center court. I want that because he feels like he's going to barf some one of these days. He's going to barf on TV.
You know, so every time like they say, like, so Kevin Durant's been out for a month and Kyrie has missed a few games within that stretch. I always kind of just want Nash to be like, Harden, you're sitting this game. Like, because I want Harden to relax a little bit. He's been so phenomenal playing so many minutes.
I feel like Harden's like, I want to go for this like Iron Man, whatever, like most games in. Yeah, I think he's going for that stupid stuff.
But also the reason why I want Nash to do that, to say, Harden, please sit, is because I want to see just like a full game of Nick Claxton, Chris Chioza, Landry. Like, I want all the backup players, just because I need to remember what it was like.
Wow.
You know, remember how much fun it was when you were like dreaming that Isaiah Whitehead would be something.
You want to boot up your N64 and play a little
Mario Kart, which I did buy off of eBay from some Taiwanese teenager who made it for me. They
made it.
Someone, there's some guy,
like a paper mache. Like, what are we talking?
I'm pretty sure he's a Taiwanese teenager. If you go on eBay, you can find him somehow.
Handcrafted.
They will remake for you Mario Kart. They will. It's a new Mario Kart. It's not used. It's new. And the only way you can make it new is if someone makes it for you, literally. So
wait, hang on. I don't want to drill down too deep on this, but so it's like it's a cartridge that loads into an N64 that they're making like with a 3D
exactly
printer.
Exactly like Mario Kart. It's the same game, except it's a new cartridge. And there's only one way it could happen is if it's built. Like, someone would have to build it now.
Okay.
And I think there's someone from Taiwan.
How much did you pay for this?
$25.
It's good. These price for a
dude. For have a you seen the prices? Black of Mario market. Kart? They're like $500.
Dude, I had a crazy run in college where I was dropping. It was 85 cents on Amazon.
I know, Brian. I was.
Just, oh yeah, you were there. I was just stacking up. I have like probably 2 G's worth of N64 games in my closet.
GoldenEye and Mario Kart are just like if you could put that on the market right now, make a lot of money.
I got Conker's.
Everyone cares about.
I got Conker's Bad Fur Day. Like, I'm going deep. I got two copies of it back when it was going for $5 a piece.
Of what?
Conker's Bad Fur Day. It's a very rare N64 game. Mike, what else? What's the last bit?
I wanted to bring up something real quick. So, cleaning the glass is one of the best stat sites out there. And, you know, we're also worried about the defense. And Blake Griffin, will he help? Will he help? Won't he help? I don't know. But here's the thing. Over the past 2 weeks, the Nets' offense has been the best in the NBA. Just barely above Denver, but the best in the NBA. And they've been the 13th best defense over the past 2 weeks. And I bring that up to say, and I've said it before, the Nets don't have Kevin Durant right now, who's technically their best defender and their best player. And they're still the best offense in the NBA. And over the past 2 weeks, they've been the 13th best defense. And like it's within... If they were 0.2 better per game, they would be the 11th best defense in the NBA. A massive jump up from 13.
Huge.
So
huge.
They are. I think the defensive issues, it's not that they're unfounded. It's just that they're a little skewed. It's just the thing that every guy on ESPN and gal can bring up and say, but are you worried about the Nets defense? And we're worried. You know, I think we're properly worried. I think it's overblown. It's not like the Cleveland Cavaliers, what was it, like 5 years ago when they were the worst defense in the NBA and then they turned it on in the playoffs and
made their own. I've seen them do the turn it on enough to know that it's there when it actually matters. That's what I've decided. Because we've been in this Nets K-hole for years, you know, and we were like, oh gosh, like, is everything going to be okay? And as long as you just see it happen when it needs to happen once or twice, you're fine. We're good.
And it's another thing, actually, why I do like James Harden on this team is because he can play defense. He can body up dudes. The Nets are currently on cleaning glass, which is just only points. This is not like an advanced stat. This is just how many points they give up per game. They're currently 24th in the NBA right now in points per game that they give up. Mm-hmm. And they're the number one offense. So it's trending in the right direction. If they get to be middle of the pack defensively and number one on offense, then that's the mix.
I hate
the
toxic how mix. Loose and fast everyone plays with this concept of defense. Like they're just like, everyone's like, yeah, but he can't play defense. But like, it's just such a, I don't know. These are entry level takes, just like the guy can't play defense take.
So that was our Blake Griffin emergency pod. Thank you all for listening. Find us on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself.
How did you
I think
know,
it's $4 a month.
How did you know I didn't have more to say?
I don't have anything else to say.
Well,
and I have to, no, you, I have to go to the restroom.
You
got
to go to the bathroom.
So bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, I'll save this huge blistering take for next time that I have. For next time. Next time.
Okay. Thank you all for listening. Do you have a blistering take?
I don't. No, I'm just kidding. I really do not.
How blistering?
Literally no takes. I don't. I'm just
thank you all for listening. At BK Glugas on Twitter. What a joy. The Nets have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, yep, James Harden, Blake Griffin.
We did it, boys.
Bruce Brown.
We did it.
Brownsville.
Stand up.
Okay. I got to go pee so bad.